performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Hello, and thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Nick Urban, a Czech practitioner, data scientist, and holistic performance health coach. Every week, I bring you essential life skills, strategies, and tools not taught in school to help you build the ultimate high-performance lifestyle. Today, we're continuing our exploration into fitness and physical performance. Fitness has a special place in my heart because it's how I got started on my journey towards health optimization. Yes, bodybuilders were onto something. I consider some of the top in the field to be the original biohackers. The late Charles Poliquin is one such example. Decades ago, he was talking about magnesium and supplementing with creatine, essential amino acids, and the importance of strength as a predictor for overall health span. All of these concepts are coming back into vogue. At the same time, would you believe me if I told you that bodybuilding can be extremely unhealthy? Well, this week's guest has experience with exactly that. She's been on the stage with popping veins, toned legs, and a shredded six-pack. After going through what you're about to hear in this episode, she's on a mission to help others, whether on the stage or off the stage, improve their body in a healthy and sustainable way. Our guest this week is Connie Nightingale. Before she began bodybuilding, Connie frequently experienced brain fog, body fatigue, weight gain, and a general lack of motivation, all indicators that she needed to change something. So in 2015, she began her rewarding journey towards healthy living by diving down a nutrition rabbit hole, one that she never came out of, and resulted in certifications as a nutritionist and personal trainer so that she could help others do the same. An old bodybuilding truism is that abs start in the kitchen. But it's not just abs. Mental wellness, gut health, and physical energy all start in the kitchen too. Connie's expertise ranges from nutritional guidance, one-on-one personal training, contest and lifestyle coaching, mindset reframing, and bodybuilding competition posing. Her goal is to teach each person how to empower themselves towards future self-sufficiency by cracking their very own health code. Whether or not you're looking to get to the big stages yourself, Connie has diet, lifestyle, and overall wellness tips that'll help you out. Chief among those is to gather data on how your body's operating. One of the best and most powerful ways to do so is through blood work. After our episode together, I went out and got my vitals measured. I use a company called Inside Tracker. They're also a sponsor of this show. Here's why I chose them. First of all, they're an entire all-in-one wellness platform. They gather data from your fitness and wearable devices like Fitbit and Garmin, and potentially down the line, Aura and others. Then they combine that with your genetic data and your blood data to get a 10,000 foot view of your current health status. They run all that through some ever-evolving algorithms, which spits out a measure of your internal age. So what is internal age and why does it matter? Well, a lot of the biggest movers of health and wellness you can't see or feel, but they show up in your blood and other biomarkers. Next time you use their service, you can see how your lifestyle choices, good and bad, impact your body and brain. For your blood work, you don't just get back a binary pass/fail. For each biomarker, Inside Tracker breaks down whether you're fully optimized, whether it needs improvement, or if you're at risk. They take it a step further and give you customized, actionable plans based on your lifestyle and what you can commit to. If you're interested in checking it out, I suggest the same plan that I got, Inside Tracker Ultimate. They're generously offering you 25% off all products using the code NICKPRO25. The links, the code, and my full review of their service will be in the show notes. One last thing before we get started. Please share this episode with friends, family, coworkers, your partner, or anyone that you believe would find this information helpful. That's how we get seen and how I continue bringing you thought-provoking guests. With that out of the way, let's dive in. We're blessed tonight to be joined by Connie Nightingale, a certified nutritionist and personal trainer. Connie, what have you done so far for your health and performance? Any unusual things?
Oh boy, I think that's kind of a loaded question. I've legit tried just about everything under the sun, I think. Even gotten crazy in my younger years with like Special K diets and SlimFast and all of those things. And that's why I can talk about what works and what doesn't, because I've really experimented with everything.
What's your current go-to morning routine, if you have one?
You know, it's been kind of disrupted as of late. I've got a lot of business ventures going on. I also suffer from some pretty bad autoimmune disease. So lately I've taken a step back in that, and that's kind of looked like a different style of training and a lot less training. And so the consistency of my old routine has kind of changed a little bit. And so that definitely, it's not a consistent thing, but one thing is for certain, I get up every morning regardless of whether I am training, and then I spend time drinking my coffee, going over my morning goals and what I want to achieve. And then that's when all the kids get woke up and everything breaks loose and goes crazy, because if you're a parent out there, getting kids out the door and getting them to school is always a fun adventure.
Take a sigh of relief after they're out the door and you have the day to yourself.
Totally. Yes.
Sometimes the best thing you can do for your health and well-being is just to slow down and take a deep breath and not push yourself quite as hard.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's been my latest thing. I can't say that it's anything special. There's one thing in common with all of my mornings, though, and that's that I spend time doing something for myself. Mm. So, you know, whether it is 15 minutes or 45 minutes or an hour, I do take that moment. It's typically my ritualistic moment with my coffee in the morning to unwind and unpack my day and figure out what my goals are. And I think that's a really important thing, is to have that moment.
I can relate. The coffee preparation time is a sacred time over here as well.
Absolutely. Love it.
So what's your superhuman story? How did you get here? You went from bodybuilding into a more holistic approach.
I mean, I had already started down the holistic approach type of realm far before I got into bodybuilding. It's actually what led me to get into bodybuilding, because I was unhealthy for most of my life, really, if you want to get into it. I mean, I was crash dieting from 12 years old until I was in my 20s. I was constantly lifting weights at the gym. I thought it would change the way I looked, and nothing did. And then finally, when I wanted to help out a family member that was struggling with some mental health stuff, we started doing the GAPS diet. And in the process of that, my whole body changed. Everything that I had been struggling with my whole life completely went away. And I dropped about 50 pounds. I started at 200 pounds. I was 198 pounds when I embarked on the GAPS diet journey. And I lost about 50 pounds. And at that point, I started to feel great. And I knew that I needed to start getting fitness into my life, because my body needed that. I could just tell by looking at it. And so I made it this thing to start working out. And at that point, I started to get really super jacked. And I had always had this obsession with like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And next thing you know, I start looking into bodybuilding shows, and I was like, I could do this. So basically, I started working out, got super jacked, ended up getting into the bodybuilding field. And I never looked back, but there was some downsides to that. And that was, there's a lot of bro science out there. And at the time, I had already been in this nutrition rabbit hole for a long time. I knew everything that my coaches were wanting me to do was wrong, but I didn't listen to my own intuition, because I thought, I'm paying these people, they know what they're doing, and so they're going to help me be healthy, they're going to help me get to the stage. Well, the stage isn't healthy, right? There's nothing about it that's healthy. And then to make it even worse, there are different coaching modalities that can make it more unhealthy than others, like, hours of cardio, hours in the gym, overtraining completely, not eating enough. Toward the end of my very last contest prep, I was eating 600 calories a day and doing 3 hours of cardio. And it wreaked extreme havoc on my metabolic systems. And I say what I had was metabolic chaos going on afterwards. And it left a lot of permanent damage. One thing included was the fact that I ended up with Hashimoto's autoimmune disease, among a couple other things that we haven't quite ironed out yet, but major hypothalamus pituitary axis dysfunction, HPA axis dysfunction, which is pretty much adrenal fatigue. I mean, people say they're different, but I ended up with some major problems coming out of my last set of shows. And that really got me into further pursuing nutrition and health and what does make us perform optimally. And that is where all of this stuff started to come to light, even the mistakes I had made, because there were a lot of things up until this major downfall of mine that I didn't understand because I'd never been in that place, right? I thought you could train hard, sleep when you're dead. And that was just how it goes, right? But what I didn't realize is that I was wreaking havoc on everything. I was wreaking havoc on my digestion, my metabolic processes, my thyroid, like everything was just totally trashed from this mentality that I had where it was just like train hard, train harder, and train the hardest, you know? So I learned a lot. And, you know, that's where your mess becomes your message. When you've lived it, you've been there, you've found health, and then you've got away from it because of other things that had nothing to do with even nutrition necessarily. And so that's kind of where I am today, where I'm trying to help other people not end up in that particular position.
You said something earlier that I'd like to unpack a bit. You mentioned that the stage isn't necessarily health. And from an outside perspective, it's hard to imagine that these people flexing on the stage with 3% body fat, veins popping out of every part of their body, how that couldn't be health. But since you've experienced it, you know the inside scoop. How do people get there?
Okay, there are so many things about the stage that are completely unhealthy. From mindset to physiology, it's all really not actually a healthy thing at all. And I do coach bodybuilding athletes, but my job is to help them be as healthy as possible. But there is a point where it's just not healthy. And that point is where you're not meant physiologically to be single digit body fat, especially not women. I mean, men, they can get away with it a little bit more. Women, I mean, let's face it, whether we want to or not, our physiology wants us to reproduce. They want us to have that extra body fat. So there's that piece of it, which is super hard on our hormones and all of that. There's this other piece to it where when you train like that to get to that level, you are pushing your body's processes as hard as they can go. And it's a stressor. Even if your outside life isn't stressful, you're still placing this stress, training stress on your body. And this happens to not only bodybuilding athletes, but it also happens to triathletes and cyclists and anybody that's a high performer. And when your body's under large amounts of stress, it's chronically trying to take care of inflammation. It's also chronically trying to, like, your digestion gets flawed because you're under stress. And so it's placing its emphasis on helping the stressed out body recover rather than digesting food. That's the last thing on its mind. The other thing is when you start to downregulate calories, there are certain metabolic adaptations that are going to happen. And essentially your basal metabolic rate goes down. So your body stops. It thinks it's going to starve and it knows that it needs all of this body fat for some kind of processes. And so it literally will start down regulating everything. So even down to your daily energy expenditure, your NEAT activity, which is non-exercise activity. And so like me, I talk with my hands a lot and I flip my hands around. I'm doing it more because I'm making a point here right now. But the thing is it actually will downregulate all of that without you even knowing that. So you'll stop tapping your foot at work during the day and you'll stop moving around in your chair. And it just starts to move all of these things down to a smaller scales because it wants to save energy. And that can even look like hormones, right? So another thing is stress suppresses hormones, and stress also affects like your hormone production. And then the same thing, I totally lost where I was going with this, but stress. So stress interrupts your hormone production. And then also when you're getting to that critically low body fat, there's where I'm going. When you get to that critically low body fat, your body then says, you can't have a baby. You don't have enough energy to make this thing. And so it starts to also mess with your hormones. And that's where a lot of women that are under a lot of stress and that are training super hard and getting super lean, they lose their period because your body doesn't need to be spending that energy trying to make you want to reproduce. So there's a ton of bad things involved. And that doesn't even count some of the bad peak week strategies out there, like loading sodium and depleting you of water. And I can't tell you how many people have had heart attacks in their hotel rooms after getting ready for a bodybuilding show. So there's a lot of really bad things that can happen with a bodybuilding prep.
And isn't there a strategy where you consume a lot of glucose or like ultra refined carbohydrates right before to get a popping veins and that certain look?
Yeah, in a sense, yes. It depends on the coach and who does it. But oftentimes, yeah, they think that if you deplete like the weeks coming up to that, and then you put in this heavy carb load with sodium, and then you pull the water, that it's going to fill up your muscle glycogen and make the muscles look full and voluptuous, you know? But what they don't actually realize is when they're doing these crazy things, which this is all crap that we could get into, but you know, they're stressing the body out even more. So it actually starts to hang on to water. Also when the muscle gets depleted of glycogen, it actually gets less sensitive to that uptake and more likely to spill over when they do carb load. And by spill over, I mean the muscle can only take on so much glycogen. So if you overdo it, then that plumpness is gone because that glycogen spills over and it's almost between the muscle tissue and the skin. They call it spilled over in the bodybuilding industry because then it ruins all of that definition that you have when you hit the stage. So that's where a lot of coaches, get heck for blowing a peak week because they overcarb someone or mess up water manipulation, and that client will be soft looking even though they're super lean.
Interesting. I just did a 2-week experiment with a technology called continuous glucose monitoring, and I had a little patch in the back of my elbow here. When I worked out at the end, if I ate carbs, I could get to a certain amount and have no increase in blood glucose or very transient increase. But if I went above that by a little bit, then I, all of a sudden I got this huge spike.
Yeah. So I love continuous glucose monitors. They are like my favorite tool. I don't have one right now. I typically wear one pretty frequently. The only reason I haven't invested in one right now is because I'm not competing in any way, not cycling, not bodybuilding. And I pretty much know how to hack my body because I've worn one for so long. So, but yeah, they're amazing because the things that they can do and tell you about your body are insane. Like they can tell you if your heart rate increases to too much of a glycolytic, or that activity gets too glycolytic, meaning it's your body can't burn fat fast enough to make energy. So then it starts needing glucose because glucose is a faster energy. Then what happens is it will actually start gluconeogenesis, where it actually has to bring your blood sugar up some way. So it starts doing that from protein instead. And so you can see if you're utilizing your own tissues for fuel, there's a lot of wonderful things that you can learn about by wearing a continuous glucose monitor. You know, I'm not honestly 100% sure on that science. I can't tell you to be for certain, but I do know that cortisol does bring up blood glucose. I'm not sure the way that it does it though. So this is a really controversial subject, right? Especially with females. Like, you see a ton of stuff about intermittent fasting with males and they're like, yeah, it's good, it's no problem. And then you see the other side of it for females where they're like, no, this impacts your hormones and all that. Just from my own anecdotal experience, I love to fast. I think it's great. I feel like a million bucks when I do it. But here's the biggest mistake that I find people are making. They're fasting, they're cutting off a couple meals a day, but then they're not getting the amount of calories they need. So what's happening is they're actually not eating enough. And it's turned into a diet then, basically, which it shouldn't be the case. Like me, if I fast, if I do like an 8-16 or something like that, eating window, I'm making sure that I'm still getting the same amount of calories in that I would have if I hadn't have fasted. And so that might look like the two meals that I do have are much, much bigger, like, than it would be if I was eating 3 or 4 or 5 meals a day.
Okay. And if people are doing that, going that route and eating fewer calories, and we've already discussed how that isn't a good long-term solution for weight loss because the metabolism gets downregulated and you start to burn fewer and fewer calories every day when you're at rest, what would you recommend? How do you find that people actually lose weight successfully over the long term?
Through overall health. Mm. If you start fueling for overall health, like treating your body, like you wouldn't put sugar in your car's gas tank. You don't want to put bad fuel in your body. And when all of these things come together synergistically, so like when your digestive processes are on point, that means you're absorbing all of your nutrients. It also, everything revolves around the gut. And so that also affects your mood and energy performance there, hormones. So eating quality food that is not inflammatory is going to be a great thing. But also, it's not only about the nutrition, because we're going back to this stress piece. You could be eating all of the amazing food in the world, but if you are stressed out and you're not digesting it, then you're also going to be placing harm on your digestive processes. But I think overall health, I find so many things get linked back to digestion with a lot of my clients. But when you are fueling your body with proper nutrition, and that is not just your diet, that's your outside life, the kind of stress that you have going on, your mental diet, like how do you talk to yourself? Do you think when you look in the mirror that you're fat? You know, like there's so many pieces of this. And so overall health and wellness is when you actually get the physique that you want without even trying.
Yeah. And what is the gut's role in bodybuilding and overall health and wellness? I know that's one of your specialties.
Yeah. So we touched on it a little bit there. But like I said, if you're not digesting your food properly, there's a ton of even links to your thyroid being downregulated and stuff like that. So, and the hard part is when a lot of people get super stage lean, their digestion slows down because their body is stressed. Mm-hmm. And then also because it's trying to hang on to as much food as it can. It doesn't want to just reel through it fast. So especially in the bodybuilding space, being mindful of what's going on with digestion is super important. A lot of times that can look like, well, obviously stress is a really big thing for me. So my clients, like I just had a client win all of her bikini classes, but in her first ever show, which was really great. Congrats. And we kept her healthy, but making sure that her digestion is moving well. And, you know, sometimes that might look like a little bit less fiber. Sometimes your body can't keep up with that load. And then making sure she has enough acid to actually digest her food, because when you do get stressed, your body does make less of the acids needed to digest your food. And so that may be something that you need to supplement in. So, you know, possibly bringing in like a betaine with pepsin supplement, things like that can actually help you break down your food correctly. Because if you're starting to have your digestion slow and you don't have a good acidic environment, you're also inviting the bad bugs in, which can look like SIBO and stuff like that. So taking care of the pH of your stomach is extremely important. And sometimes that looks like exogenously supplementing with some kind of acid to help with that.
I'm a fan of using natural methods whenever possible because there's complications of having your stomach acid go too high and at the same time too low. But like you said, if you're not digesting and assimilating the nutrients, there's no point.
Yeah, absolutely. And then another really common thing that I see in a lot of people as a side note is they don't have their gallbladder. And the gallbladder has a critical role in many things, but when it excretes bile, it's using that to break down your fats. And many fats have your fat soluble vitamins in them. So if you're not breaking down your fats, then you're actually probably not uptaking all of your fat soluble vitamins either, which is like A, D, and K. So making sure that you're breaking down your fats is also very important. So if you're somebody that doesn't have your gallbladder, you need to be on some kind of bile salt of some kind.
We were talking earlier and in a separate conversation about the tragedy of science declaring certain organs and things in the body as completely unnecessary. And then who knows how long later, 5 years later, 10 years later, we look back with hindsight and realize what a mistake it was and how many different processes these useless organs were involved in.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say if your doctor wants to take out any organ of any kind, you need to really ask a lot of questions. Unfortunately, in my case, it was before I had started my health journey and knew anything about what was going on. Looking back in hindsight, I almost even understand why I lost my gallbladder. But by the time they caught it, I had a severe infection and it had to be removed with an emergency surgery. And, you know, now years down the road, I still struggle with getting my digestion right because I don't have it. And I didn't know that nobody ever told me I needed to be taking some kind of bile supplement, like nobody. And I feel like that led to a lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle. It's never just one thing. It's an accumulation of things, right? But for me, definitely in part of my health journey, you add stress, you add missing gallbladder, you add that your digestion is messed up, and then, overtraining and all these things. And you can definitely open yourself up to a lot of things going wrong. Well, it's highly individualized. So I'm going to say it depends. It really, really depends. Some people will thrive on one thing and others will not do well, you know? And so I think it's really broad. To put it all into a nutshell, though, if I had to encase it all into one thing, it would be eat real food. Like if it has an ingredient label, that's probably your warning right there. You don't need a warning label, right? So that would be an easy way people could start to clean up their diet. I personally like to stick with a little bit lower carb diet. That works well for me. It doesn't work well for everybody, but I'm in the camp where I would rather eat high fat, low carb, lots of protein. I eat high protein. So I mean, people would say it's keto. I guess I get into ketosis, but keto technically by terms is much higher fat than what I eat because I eat much more protein. So, but I think eating real food is a great place to start. Eating kind of more ancestrally and trying to remove things that have been highly processed is optimal because these highly processed foods are super hyper palatable, void of protein, which is my best friend. And they are also full of polyunsaturated fats that are really harmful to your cells. So when you start getting these processed foods involved with your eating styles, it makes it really hard for you to actually get the amount of protein you need because all you want to do is snack on these hyper palatable foods that keep you hungry and going back for more.
Yeah, I follow a similar approach. I do what's called carbohydrate backloading or earning my carbs. I eat high protein, moderate fat throughout the day until the evening. And after I've worked out, if I've earned my carbs in the workout, then I'll have some unprocessed foods, whole foods. So to get back to the diet similarities, we both follow something pretty close.
Yeah, and really, you know, it depends on where I'm at in my journey or my lifestyle at the time. Sometimes I'll have a lot more carbs than others. When I, you know, something that works really great for me is kind of almost carb cycling, but it's like a cyclical keto, I guess, more similar to a cyclical keto. And these are all, like I said, super highly individualized things, right? But for me, if I'm in ketosis all week, carb load on a Friday for like a Saturday or Sunday race, then I feel like $1 million. And so I've found that even if I'm not doing any crazy activities, having at least one high carb day a week works really, really well for my body. Plus my insulin sensitivity is super good. So when I do have those high carb loads, when I was wearing a continuous glucose monitor, it hardly brought my blood sugar up at all because it was just replenishing my muscle glycogen stores.
Yeah, those are some really cool insights. And it goes to show that the body prefers, it thrives on little changes here and there. After you establish a routine, changing it up briefly and then going back can stimulate weight loss, muscle gain, you name it.
Absolutely. 100% agree with you on that.
If you were to stack rank the most important factors for losing weight, gaining muscle, or overall just changing your body composition, how would you break it down? And so, for example, like sleep, recovery, diet, exercise, supplements, etc., like how would you rank the different factors that you find are the most important?
You know, honestly, number one, first and foremost, is going to be your mindset. Where do you want to be? I mean, you can want to lose weight all you want, and you can want to look like a fitness model all you want. But if you're not there, like mentally, as far as being ready to go all in and make those changes, and you're just doing it to try to conform to societal pressures, you're obviously not going to be successful. And I see this every day in my coaching clients. I'll have people come to me. They're like, yeah, I want to lose weight. But do you really want to lose weight? Or do you want to lose weight because you think so-and-so thinks you should look a certain way? And so a lot of times people want to lose weight, but they don't want to do what it takes to get there. And that's the other portion of this, right? I know I've mentioned stress a couple of times, but that's my second listed one. For sure, sleep. So, you know, mindset, sleep, and stress are your number ones with anything, because I am a prime example of this. You can do everything else perfectly, but if you are stressed out, then you are not going to get anywhere. And I've encountered this in my health journey multiple times, including now. And for me, it may not even be outside stress that I'm dealing with, right? How about just training load? I have a tendency to overtrain. I love to train. It's my favorite thing to do in the world. But my body doesn't necessarily agree with me on that. It's like, oh, you want to ride your bike 200 miles a day and lift weights 5 days a week? Sorry, wrong. You're not going to get there. And so stress doesn't have to be just outside stress. And people sometimes feel like they're just fine. And maybe they're used to existing in the rat race and going at 100 miles an hour all the time, but their body still perceives that as a stressor. So making sure that you're taking moments to breathe, take deep breaths in through your nose, take 5 to 10 minutes, maybe every couple of hours, and just zone out for a minute. Something to take your brain off of the rat race is super important. So I can't tell you how important stress is. Honestly, if anybody really wants to know how important stress is, they need to read the book, Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. It is the best book ever. I highly recommend it. But
Or they could also use a continuous glucose monitor and run their own self experiment, because that's exactly what I did. And I've always heard that stress is important. It's implicated in virtually all chronic and degenerative diseases. And I thought, yeah, I know that already. Sure, it doesn't really apply to me. I can control my stress pretty well. Then I slapped the NutriSense on and waited a day for it to calibrate. It calibrated, waited another day, reached out to them and said, hey, my glucose measurements are inaccurate. This can't be right. Like, last measurement was far below this. And didn't think it could be the fact that I was pulling 16-hour days and sleeping 5 hours. And then I got through 4 or 5 days of that, got to rest and recover. And all of a sudden, right after I recovered, the glucose just dropped right back down. And I realized, having a glucose hovering at 110, 120 throughout the day isn't a good idea when I'm generally hovering around 80, 70, 80 when I'm not stressed out. So that's a huge difference. And I'd always known about it, but until I saw it firsthand, it didn't really sink in.
Yeah, those continuous glucose monitors are so impactful, right? Because also, and that's why I say that those things are the top of the list. And I know that it seems like, well, Connie, doesn't nutrition happen in here somewhere? Yes, absolutely it does. But like having high blood sugar is super inflammatory and it holds up a whole bunch of other processes in the body. And so high blood sugar alone is going to keep you from losing weight. So if you can't get that under control and then you're eating everything perfectly, you're not going to see results. You're going to end up struggling. So that is the first and foremost of all of this. And then the key after that would be nutrition. And we kind of talked about that a little bit, but eating real foods that are satiating and are bringing you nourishment, and not just eating the same thing all the time too, because, you know, we need diversity. We thrive on that. So, you know, I think if you're one of these people that, you know, I used to do it myself, all I ate was chicken and sweet potato and asparagus all the time. You know, your body, you're missing other micronutrients that can be utilized from other foods. So eating whole, real foods, things that don't have a label, is extremely important. Another thing is if I think if anybody could change, if we got all stress and mindset aside, if anybody could change one thing about their diet, I would say remove gluten. That is, if you don't know where to start and it's all overwhelming to you and you can't get anything else out of this conversation, take away that you need to remove stress and remove gluten, because those are the biggest offenders when it comes to body composition.
How do you feel about products that are gluten-free? They've taken the same product and made a gluten-free version of it.
It depends on the product. I mean, there are products out there that are total crap. And then there are products out there that are, have better ingredients. Like you read the label and you're like, okay, I know what rice is. I know what brown rice is. And I know brown rice flour, what it is. The problem is many of these gluten-free foods have to be hyper processed in order to remove gluten from them. And oftentimes when I was wearing a continuous glucose monitor, I realized that some of these actually hit my blood sugar harder than eating the real piece of bread did. And so being aware of the kind of gluten-free foods that you're choosing, you know, and doing everything in moderation. Like in my family the other day, we found a quality loaf of gluten-free bread, and because my son had been dying to have a grilled cheese sandwich. And, you know, sometimes you have to make a compromise too, but making that compromise sans whatever it is that you have decided you are just not going to put into your life. And I would say gluten is one of the big offenders. The other one is polyunsaturated fats. So we have a couple no-gos in our household, and they are gluten and polyunsaturated fats. So soybean oil, canola oil, vegetable oils, cottonseed oils, that kind of stuff, because they're all really horrible for you.
They're horrible for you. And unlike sugar, which is demonized far more often, your cells incorporate those oils into the membrane, and I forget the exact date, but I believe that they exist in your body for years after you consume
them. It's like 6 years, I think.
Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? So sugar, I mean, there is a point where we can demonize sugar, but if you think about it, sugar can be burned off.
Exactly.
So I mean, if I am going to eat sugar, which I do eat sugar, it's not like I'm like, no, I'm perfect and I do everything better than everybody else. No, I do eat sugar. I do enjoy treats with my family sometimes, but I make sure that they are quality treats. Like I make sure that, you know, I mean, even if it's cane sugar, you can burn it off. It's not got a bunch of like, you know, these oils that are going to stay in your cells forever. And more than likely me, I run at such a high energy level anyways, it's not going to hang around that long before it's gone. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a commonly overlooked one. And unfortunately that's the biggest drawback in my opinion of eating out at restaurants and traveling, because it's harder to control the oils. And I'll even ask them to cook the meal in butter, and I get a lot of raised eyebrows and weird looks.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny because we are in this society where, you know, these real fats have been demonized, right? I mean, back in the 70s, you know, it was okay. Ansel Keys said it was okay to smoke cigarettes, but you couldn't eat polyunsaturated fats. But there was a whole bunch of other interests involved in that. And so that just stuck. And that's where we're at here today, as all of these people have carried these values over to their friends and family. And they're still trying to market these things as healthy. And that's the unfortunate part about the food industry, right? The front of the label, if anyone didn't know this, yeah, is not really regulated. It can say whatever it wants. It can even say gluten-free on it. And I mean, literally, but it's the back part that actually counts. And so all of these things have these taglines and these key words that make us think that they're healthy. And I used to be guilty of this too. If it said more fiber, I bought it. If it said lower fat, I bought it. If it said more protein, I bought it. And they do this on purpose. They have us programmed to think that we don't need to investigate. Just believe me, trust me. They've tried to gain our trust, and in a world where we should be questioning everything. And I think that's part of becoming our own health advocates, is beginning to question everything and not just going with what societal norms say is okay.
The most egregious violation of that I can think of, and this I see regularly, is when companies put organic on the front and it's not certified organic, so they're allowed to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, and even with the gluten stuff, if it doesn't have that little circle with the GF in the middle of it, it's not actually gluten free. And I mean, I've actually been poisoned that way. Like, just to fill people in, myself, when I have gluten, I can't get out of bed the next day. That's how bad it actually affects me because of having an autoimmune condition, and it got worse over time. My body became very sensitive to it. If I get glutened, I'm in deep trouble, big, deep trouble. Like the last time I got gluten, I had to go to the hospital and be put on prednisone. Like it was that bad. And I don't want to be on any of those kind of drugs or have to deal with any of that kind of stuff. Like, so for me, it's, I have to scrutinize everything. And that's when I started to learn, holy cow, not some of this stuff isn't even gluten-free, whether it's the ingredients say wheat in them or not, or whatever. There's a lot of things that are being put in our foods we don't even know about.
Yeah. Foods and additives. And in this day and age, we really have to be our own health advocates. Like you were saying, we have to run our own self experiments and figure out what works for us and stop trusting other people to do our homework for us. Because if you do that, it might not be the outcome you're looking for. In fact, it probably will not. And a distinction I heard recently is that companies are now no longer hiring scientists to report on the latest findings, but technicians. And if you look at the outcomes of studies, I think it's like 70% of the time the company hires them, they find a result that's in accordance with that company's position.
Yeah, and that comes down to medical care as well, right? You know, you and I both know there are a lot of great doctors out there right now that are leading the health movement to make changes. And I am fortunate to be friends with many of these really well-known doctors that are doing this. And they have come out and they've been like, listen, I didn't realize the books I was learning from in school were written by the pharmaceutical companies and owned by Big Food. And so there are doctors out there doing really wonderful things, and they think that they're helping people, but they were not taught the right way. So they are forwarding on false information and they don't even realize it. And I work with a lot of people that have major health conditions. And when we start running lab work and identifying some of the things that have been missed for years and years by their doctors, it's like, wow, you need to take this to your doctor and point it out to them. And it's gotten to the point now where I'm just like, find a functional medicine doctor, at least somebody that is trying to look for what's causing this rather than putting a Band-Aid on it. And so even lab work, if your doctor says you're fine, I wouldn't believe them. I wouldn't believe them, because you need fine. There's a difference between fine and optimized. And
yes,
I think a lot of people, even when they get their labs done, they're like, well, you're normal. Well, societally, we are getting worse and worse. So I don't want to be a normal human being in an average of a bunch of sick people. So We have to be our own health advocate. If when we get our labs, we need to start pouring through those and seeing, are we in an optimized range? We're not going off of the national average here. Or if we don't feel good and our doctor says we are fine, we need to pursue that because we're not fine. You should feel good.
And those normal lab ranges have been quietly shifting year by year to become lower and lower and less optimal. And if that's the case, why am I not being compared to the way humans were 20 years ago? I want that lab reference value. And if you compare my current values against that, I'm out of average. So let's investigate.
Absolutely. And I mean, even just one brief example of that is males and testosterone. If you think about it, like nationally, we, all things aside, like more and more people can't conceive even. They have no libido. Like our hormones are totally a train wreck. And much of that coincides with obesity and that epidemic as well as stress. And you look at so many males now, the doctors say it's normal for them to have their testosterone at 200. And that is like, it's unheard of to me because that is so violently low that most males can't exist that way. Yet they're saying that that's optimal. And it's no wonder so many people suffer from fatigue. They suffer from all of these things because, you know, they're not optimized. They're within normal limits.
So since there's these normal limits keep shifting and you have to actually do some digging to find real, accurate information these days, how do you stay on top of what's true and what's the bro science, for example?
Oh boy. So that is actually really extremely hard question to answer. I think as a coach and a nutritionist, we do our best to surround ourselves with other people that are progressively thinking, right? And so for me, that looks like taking a ton of classes. And some of these classes blow my mind. They all say different things. And I think you need to take the information that you get out of these things and do your best to find out what works well for your clients and yourself. So, and oftentimes that might look different. And so that's the biggest part of a lot of this career that I'm in is being able to be diverse and being able to change your way of thinking in order to help people, because we're not all the same. Not every study comes out with saying the same thing, and you have to formulate opinions and resources and all of these things according to what works well on an individualized basis.
And I'd say that you'd have to also not get too attached to any one specific belief. Because as soon as you do that, you get caught in a pattern and you're unable to escape and take in new information as it comes out. It becomes dogma rather than the truth.
Absolutely. I love that. And, you know, I have been shunned by other coaches in this community before because they're so set in their beliefs. They're not willing to open other doors and look into other things. And I think that when you are closed-minded, you close doors and you aren't ever opened to new opportunities and new things that are out there.
And when that happens, you stop learning as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
When you stop learning, you stop growing. So it's all one big cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%.
Back on the physical performance side of things, back in your competition days, did you take any specific supplements to get more out of your exercise?
There's a couple things. So I am a fan of creatine. I think creatine is a great supplement. I think that it actually has studies backing it up as well for brain health and
yes,
stuff like that.
I actually wrote an article on creatine as a nootropic.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And so I would love to read it actually. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a lot of studies backing up that creatine is actually really super good for your brain health, not just muscular functions. And so I think that's a great basic supplement to incorporate in. I think that making sure though that it's a quality one, because there's so many bad supplements out there these days. So again, weeding things out just like you would with nutrition. I'm also, and this is kind of like a gray area for some people, but I'm also a huge fan of peptides.
Hmm.
I have used BPC 157 to help heal a few injuries that I've had.
It's especially good for the gut as well, right?
Yeah, it's really good for a lot of things. And when I was was first coming out of my last contest prep and I was extremely ill. I had to do something. And it was like my whole body synergistically started breaking down on me. And I did a bunch of research and started learning about peptides and in other countries. I mean, the US is so, they want to make money pharmaceutically. And so they're not open to different modalities to treating illness. But in other countries, peptides are a big thing and they're being used all over. They're being used for cancer. They're being used for Alzheimer's, like very, very popular things. And so BPC-157 is a really, really great peptide.
For those that don't know, peptides are short chains of amino acids. And unlike drugs, they don't force certain biological processes in the body. They merely suggest, and the body ultimately has a final say whether or not it wants to listen to the compound.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of good research in the peptide field, but, you know, and there's people, doctors out there, like Craig Conover and, Dr. William Seeds, I think is his name, that are doing big work in the peptide industry and they're bringing it more to the forefront. You're seeing a lot more peptides out there. But yeah, I have used some peptides.
Have you tried any others aside from BPC? 157. Yeah. Have you tried TB500 and
I others? Have done TB500. I've also used ipamorelin and testamorelin. Some of those are growth hormone secretagogues. So
I was interested in testamorelin, but it's a little more expensive than others.
Yeah, that's the problem, right? Is you start getting into these really quality supplements, and even though they may help you so many ways, it depends on how much you need to invest into your health. Like for me, this actually happened post bodybuilding show because I was trying to get my health back. So I started including these compounds to help me recover because my body just didn't want to recover anymore. And so bringing those things in actually kind of made it so that I was healing faster and I was able to recover from workouts. And it also started helping me repair a lot of the adrenal and metabolic processes that were damaged as well. So there's a lot of benefits there, but they do come at a cost.
Yeah. And I've heard them referred to as the family of Wolverine compounds because of how much they can accelerate recovery.
Absolutely. I think Ben Greenfield talks about it a lot. He's a huge peptide buff. And he's like, man, I tore a hamstring once and I used BPC-157 and it literally healed me in like 2 weeks on something that should have been a surgical intervention. He's like, if you want to heal like a Wolverine, this is exactly what you should use.
In a word of caution, most peptides are not orally bioavailable, meaning that you have to do a subcutaneous injection to get the full effects.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other thing is making sure that you find quality ones. Like I said, Conover Wellness, they sell wonderful peptides. I'm not getting reimbursed for this at all. They don't even know who I am. I'm just a happy consumer. Because the thing is if you start buying them on the internet, many of them are like counterfeit. There's ones that are just, they're not even what they say they are. They're also cut with, like salts and things that are not healthy for the human body. So making sure that you get into contact with a company that actually has quality, well-known, vetted peptides is really, really important when it comes to these kind of things.
Yeah. Totally agree. And I think because you're injecting them as well, it's even more important that you get a good source. And I've also heard recently that they're coming under more regulatory scrutiny. For example, I mean, it's not a traditional peptide in the sense we're talking about, but a compound called NAC, I just heard was banned in the US. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but the fact that something that's been around, it's been a supplement, like over-the-counter supplement for decades, if not longer, is now being banned, raises red flags.
Yeah. And that's one big thing, right? So peptides actually used to be much more affordable. And then I think, and I don't know when exactly this happened, but it was probably about a year ago now, I went to buy them and they had almost tripled in price. And that was because the regulatory standards had actually changed. And I think that falls back to what's lucrative for our current healthcare system and something that's going to heal somebody is not necessarily lucrative. And same thing with NAC. I haven't read what happened with that yet. I just saw that yesterday. I'm pretty sure it's been within the last couple of days that I believe that got removed. And NAC is a really great supplement.
All kinds of uses.
Yeah. And all of a sudden it gets removed and I'm like, oh man, it's not good. I actually have one of my clients on it right now. I mean, And I'm not sure. I haven't dove into why they removed it, but you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's probably some BS.
It's now reclassified as a drug, has to be prescribed.
Oh my God. That's horrible. Well, and I think we can look forward to seeing more things like that, unfortunately, in today's world, because everything is financially driven. But everything is financially driven when it comes down to everything on the back end. And so I feel like it's just going to get worse and worse. It's not going to be about making people healthy, because this is a whole another subject we get into. But I don't think it's about making people healthy. I think it's about the money involved.
So. Yeah. I do a lot of research on novel compounds, and whether it's peptides or nootropics, I'm always more and more now these days looking to Russia and what they've been doing, because it seems that they have like the optimal performance in mind more so than we do here. And you can still get a lot of these peptides and nootropics over there, and they've been studied for decades in both sick and healthy people, whereas in the US they're barely studied at all. So it's interesting to see what comes out of Russia compared to the US.
Absolutely. And actually Russia is one of the leaders with peptides, and they're healing cancer and Alzheimer's and all of that stuff. And it's totally okay. And they use it and they're happy with it. But here it's a total different 360.
And to think that we're at the forefront of technology.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So fan of peptides, creatine's great. I think making sure that you're getting all of your micronutrients is super important as well. I've never been this person that takes a ton of supplements, but I do think that it's important to make sure you're getting all your micronutrients. So if you're lacking in some area, then definitely supplementing with good quality, whatever it may be that you're lacking in, is really a great thing. But you know, doing lab work helps you also guide you in that. So
how do you feel about multivitamins, multiminerals?
It depends on the multivitamin or multimineral, I guess. There are a lot of garbage supplements out there these days that are, you can go, there's a bunch of websites out there that test them for efficacy and like what's actually in there. And so it's hard to find good quality vitamins. Also, a lot of them have like soy and wheat and like all these things in them that are kind of hidden. But I think, you know, depending on what your lab work looks like, I think taking a good quality multi never hurt anybody.
Yeah. One of the problems I see with multis is that a lot of times they'll have a whole shotgun list of ingredients in them, and some of them compete for absorption. So like a big one, I'm trying to think of the big one. Like, I think it's calcium and magnesium, and calcium is absorbed preferentially, and so you don't get the magnesium. And there's the same with zinc and another one that I'm not, maybe zinc and copper.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're taking the pill thinking you're getting everything, you're actually only getting part of it, if that.
Yeah. And then the other thing you got to take into consideration with magnesium is a lot of companies are placing magnesium oxide in their products, which you might as well swallow a coin. I mean, you're gonna just, it's like swallowing that penny and waiting for it to come back the next couple days when you're a kid. Like, you're getting nowhere with it. It's just passing through you. So anytime you see magnesium oxide, that should be a red flag as to quality of the product, because many times that's a filler, essentially.
When you're working with clients or personally, are there specific blood panels that you find to be the most useful, like, regardless of condition?
Absolutely. So I'm a huge fan of people going to my website. There's actually a tab. It says lab work or whatever, but I do a panel on there called the Comprehensive Weight Loss Panel. I hate that it's called that because it's not all about weight loss, but it hits all of, it does a complete metabolic panel. It does all of your hormones. It checks all of the thyroid, the proper thyroid labs as well, which are super important. The only one that it does not do that I hate is that it doesn't do thyroid antibodies. And because more and more people are popping up with Hashimoto's, I like to have all of my clients do that one. So I'll typically run that comprehensive weight loss panel, and then I will add the thyroid antibodies to it. And that typically gives me everything that I need as far as getting an understanding of what's going on with that person, including vitamin D, which we all need to be looking at, vitamin D and ferritin. And if anybody didn't know, most insurance companies do not cover vitamin D, and the medical system charges like $300 to $500 for the test, which is outrageous because I can get that test done for $36. and that just goes to show you how much things are inflated when they are go through the medical system. And then the same thing with the weight loss panel that I run. I think typically in healthcare, it's like costs out of pocket after insurance pays like $1,000 for a equal lab test. And it costs the people that go on my site like $200, $250, something like that. And it's just because I love the fact that I'm linked up with these companies and stuff because I'm able to get people a discount, which is really, really awesome. But B, because there is no middleman in there, there is no insurance company telling someone what they can charge and et cetera. They're able to offer it at a normal fee, which is really great.
Yeah. And for the thyroid antibody test, does that pick up across reactions between, gluten and coffee? And I know there's certain other things that cross react.
You know, I'm not sure on that. I can't answer that one for you. I know that I like to go by TPO. There's another one too that you can go off of, but I feel like the TPO is the best. And typically people need to do these all fasted anyways, because they have fasted insulin in there too. That's one portion of the labs. And for women, that looks like getting it done, if you're still having your cycle, about the 21st day of your cycle, to make sure that it's at the right hormonal period as well.
I see.
So, but yeah, I mean, TPO typically, even that is one that should be super low. So it should be under 35 or 40. And when you start seeing it, like I've had people that have been feeling sick for years, they come to me. I had one the other day, we did labs and it was 600. And so, but the doctor had only been checking the thyroid, like what the thyroid was doing, like, so T3, T4, TSH, which if anybody doesn't know, TSH is thyroid stimulating hormone. It's the number one thyroid lab that doctors run, and they'll run that. And it's great because, okay, it's the hormone that tells your thyroid to wake up and start putting out its little friends, T4 and T3. but what happens when you have that hormone working, but the thyroid isn't actually waking up? And so the biggest thing that I see is providers only ever checking TSH. They never check any of the other thyroid hormones. And so a lot of people are getting missed there. But in this girl's case, the rest of her thyroid hormones were totally normal and her antibodies were at 600. So basically she has Hashimoto's, and which is an autoimmune disease that attacks the thyroid and it starts to kill it. Well, it hadn't killed it yet. And so she's been under attack. It's like being sick when you have this disease. It's basically like getting the flu. Your body thinks that there's something it has to get out. And when you get the flu, you get sick, you don't feel good because your body's working to take care of this thing. Well, in this case, you know, it was attacking the person, like a part of the person, and it didn't realize that it shouldn't be. And it's that way with many autoimmune diseases, but it was not caught because everything else looks normal, but nobody ever checked the antibodies. So, what they didn't realize is that all of this was under attack. So it may not necessarily be working correctly. And if it is working correctly, it's only a matter of time before it stops working correctly. So, you know, it's something that had been missed for years. Fortunately, we caught it. But if anybody ever needs a list, or I'm happy to provide you a list to put in your show notes of important labs to make sure that your doctor is checking off the list when they're running your labs, I'm happy to do that.
Perfect. Well, Connie, we're running low on time. I do have a few more questions for you. But first, what are you up to and researching these days?
Oh, boy. Well, lab work has been one that I've been really, really into. And actually, hormones, as of late, have been a big thing that I've been hitting on. I have been getting really crazy in the hormone thing. I haven't really tried it on any of my clients yet, but actually setting up their macros according to what point women are in their cycle is really interesting. It's called cycle syncing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so basically there are different times in a female cycle where they are more or less insulin resistant, insulin sensitive, and times when their body thrives on different macronutrients, basically. And so I've been getting kind of into this stuff, which has been really fun and exciting. And I can't wait until I find the perfect person to be my guinea pig for it. I hate to call it that, but that's typically how we all are, right? We have to be guinea pigs in order to find what's optimal for us. So I'm looking for the right guinea pig on that one so that I can run someone through a full protocol of changing macros according to what stage they are in their cycle.
Hmm. And if someone's interested in being your first guinea pig, how can they get a hold of you?
They can just hop on over to my website. It's ConnieNightingale.com, or shoot me a DM on Instagram at ConnieBigani, and I can get them hooked right up with whatever they want. We'll figure it all out.
Great. Okay, Connie, we're on to the rapid fire round now.
Oh, no.
These can be short answers. Don't need much thought. What is the best or worst advice you've ever received?
Boy. Well, the best advice I ever received was that I needed to change my diet by a chiropractor that told me I needed to go on the GAPS diet. And it was a crazy diet and I did it and it would change my life.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What's the number one thing that you believe that virtually no one else does?
Boy, I don't know. I believe in myself a lot, but other people do too. So yeah, I don't know if that would be, I don't know. I think.
Okay. How about a controversial opinion that you have?
Well, I love keto and a lot of people don't. So.
Especially in bodybuilding.
Yeah, exactly. I get a lot of backfire for that one. So I'm happy to throw that one out there.
Okay. This one's a little longer rapid fire question, but imagine that there's a burning of the books and all knowledge on earth is gone. You get to keep three works. It can be books, podcasts, interviews, YouTube videos, whatever you want. What would you choose?
Oh, dude, I would totally keep Ben Greenfield's book Boundless. That thing has like everything. It's the encyclopedia of health. But I think that would be an important one. Man, that's a hard one because there's so many that I have like memorized as well too. But I love the Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. That's a great book. That third one. I don't know. It would probably be some kind of medical dictionary of some kind because, with human anatomy and physiology in it, because there's a lot of amazing things that in our body that you just can't remember, right?
Yeah. Final question. This one's a little lighter, but what is one thing that your tribe doesn't know about you?
Well, geez, I play a lot of guitar. I think a lot of people probably don't know that. I don't tell a lot of people, but I'm like a huge music buff. I was raised, my dad was a blues guitar player. And so singing and playing instruments, guitar, piano, whatever I can get my hands on, has been a huge thing, a huge passion of mine my whole life. And music is a huge passion.
The hidden side of Connie.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, Connie, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure to meet and host you, and I'm wishing you the best.
All right. Thank you so much for having me on. It was my pleasure. I had a great time.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/ and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.